Hello, and welcome to The Double Pivot, the world's most agreeable soccer analytics podcast. I am Michael Cayley. We are back, and as we often discuss on this podcast, we have a Discord. That Discord server is available for all subscribers to our podcast. So you can go to patreon.com/doublepivot. You can sign up. You get the extra podcast. You get access to the Discord. Now, that's not the only people who get access to this Discord. It is the Trivote football chat. It is a Trivote, as in three in a pivot, with Grace Robertson of the Grace on Football newsletter. And so today we're doing like a full Trivote combination podcast, not a Grace podcast. We'll have Grace on soon enough. No worries. But Grace asked us a question in the mailbag, which we thought was like, this is a fantastic podcast. So we are going to answer that question. I'm joined by Mike Goodman, and he is so excited about the topic of said question.
Oh, yes. I think I remember the film. Here we go. Making me do this. I should be clear before we start. If someone were to actually make me do this and pay me money to do this, I would accept. Anyway, the music you heard on the way in is Whalers. Please download, subscribe, make us happy as podcast is patreon.com/doublepivot and the aforementioned Discord. Tell me what I have to talk about.
All right, so here is the question that Grace asked. Let's say a solidly backed investment firm. So, not 7-7, lol. Buys Everton and puts the Mikes in charge of running it. The investors have money, but do want to stay within PSR. What would the plan actually be?
Okay, here's where I want to start. I want to start from, like, the North Star first slide of the deck. And it is, one, don't get relegated, two, finish paying for stadium. Everything else in the world is secondary to those two things. And really, the first one, don't get relegated, is secondary to the second one, finish paying for the stadium. The position that Everton are in now is very specifically that they started building a new stadium, they borrowed tons of money for that stadium, they lost their secret backer Russian investor, they lost lots and lots of games, they had to borrow more money at worse rates, and they just owe a ton of money and are still not done financing this stadium. And the stadium itself is not necessarily a bad investment. The team owning the stadium, if you get it built before like disappearing into financial dust, is a thing that can better the fortunes of Everton. But you have to not get relegated. Get the stadium built so that you, instead of counting on future revenues from the stadium, are getting revenue from having the stadium to start to get your financial house in order.
Yeah, exactly. And so part of this is that Grace's question has assumed part of the solution. Because if someone, a well-capitalized investor, comes in, what that means is that well-capitalized investor is ready to sink a bunch of money into this project for a while. And they are ready to, they are capitalized enough to try to do something about this loan problem.
Right.
Because these loans are killing Everton. And one of the reasons the loans are so bad is that the people who took them out were not rich enough to take them out. And 777 can't solve this problem because they also are not rich enough. But like some new well-financed investor who is willing to commit themselves to saving Everton would be able in that situation to manage these loans, get their terms improved in whatever fashion is possible to make them not an absolute albatross around the club while they are trying to get the stadium built. So like one sort of happens off screen, and we're not going to discuss how to renegotiate loan terms on this podcast, but like that's a really, really big part of it. And if someone comes in to, you know, take this club off of 777, which I think clearly is what everyone is just waiting to have happen, but is not a given because the situation is so bad, that really helps. So that, like, clears out a bunch of the problems, but it doesn't clear all of them out.
I mean, look, this constraint, right, this constraint where you've got all of these loans and you don't have enough revenue to support all of these loans is a massive problem on the not getting relegated front. Because it massively, massively, massively constricts when and how you can acquire and keep talent. Like, you know, part of the reason I advocated for Sean Dyche, like, when they hired him, and I remain Dyche-pilled, even as the results have not necessarily followed from the performances this year, thanks to Dominic Calvert-Lewin missing an insane amount of goals, is that, like, there's no shortcut around this obstacle. You are not going to have money to build a team that is getting consistently better. Anytime you might be getting consistently better than marginally above relegation talent level, you're going to have to sell off talent. Because that's the only way that you're going to keep hitting like your PSR requirements if you want to like bring in young players, change your team, do whatever, while also having this debt hanging over your head. There's no like... There is, given the obligations on Everton's books, there is no way to increase profitability, to increase revenues such that you will be able to do like player trading that elevates your talent level significantly. Like that's the bind here for the next 5 years or so. Is like, look, maybe you like, they went out and bought somebody like a Chiriki, right? And maybe like he explodes and you sell him for like seven times what you bought him for 2 years later. And like that gives you some room. But like you're priced out of most like, you're even priced out of most gambles that you might want to take to do that. There is no shortcut around the idea that you just have to be boringly bad and stay up for a chunk of time right now.
Yeah, and I think that the situation with the club and what you need to do with the football club, it's important to sort of separate two things. I guess three things, because you already mentioned the results.
Right.
Results have not been good. And so if you have a team that is a financial basket case and is bad, like, that's a big problem. But if you separate the results from the performances, I think that, like, it's not that hard. And I would say a really simple way of going at this is that Everton actually have 35 points.
Yeah.
Everton actually have enough points not to be relegated.
That's correct.
They have a negative 10 goal difference at 35 points. Like, they're headed for lower mid-table, except for the PSR points deductions. So the performances are okay, and then on top of that, the negative 10 goal difference is actually, you know, that in turn is also lying to a certain degree because it is about bad team finishing and not having any dice effects on the opposition team finishing either. So, like, you know, the team is fine. The team is fine, more or less. But that doesn't mean the club is fine.
And the
club not being fine doesn't just mean, like, we went over the business side. But there's another part of this. One is that Everton just don't pull in that much money. And I am skeptical that Everton are simply like the equivalent of Wolves and Brentford for revenue. Like, that seems wrong to me. I think there's a real question of whether the team could make more money and that they have just been run very poorly. And then on top of that, they are currently have a good team. Mostly, a couple of player bets have gone well, and we can talk about that. But they've got a good team right now because Sean Dyche came in, took the same talent that other people had turned into bad teams, and turned it into a pretty good team. There does not appear to be any kind of front office process, just as there does not appear to be any kind of particularly business process. So, like, if they're coming in as a new, like, executives, I think that you are looking at a 5-year plan to overhaul the business and football sides of the club, even while the team on the field is pretty good.
Right, but you also have to keep the team on the field being pretty good. And I think one thing that we're going to see over the next few years is, you mentioned, like, a couple of talent bets have gone well. They have. You don't hold on to these guys. Like, Onana's going to have to get sold. And, like, a relatively small percentage of that money is going to be able to get plowed back into the team.
Yes.
Like, that's the real challenge here, right? You can't do the kind of player trading that elevates the club. You can hope that, like, you're taking enough out of player trading that doesn't push you down to relegation. It's not a place you want to be, but it's not an impossible thing to manage.
So let's do this on a sort of look at the roster level. That clearly staying within PSR means player trading profits.
Correct.
That do not mostly get plowed back into revenue or, you know, new amortization from fees. And so what Everton need to do, basically, is identify which one of Branthwaite or Onana will fetch the most money and has the least likelihood of fetching even more money in a, like, 3-year timeline, and sell that one for as much money as they can get.
Seems Branthwaite to me. Like, that just seems to me like the logical one to sell. Also because replacing him would be relatively cheaper than replacing Onana. And it is a lot easier to be wrong about center backs, right? Like we talk about this a lot. So at the moment when a center back has a lot of value, it is always more likely that their value will decline than other players in other parts of the field who you project to be, like, real talents. I mean, especially now that we're kind of, like, past the point of, like, this guy scored 12 goals off 6xG, so he's super valuable. Like, having moved past that in the market, which we really have to a large degree, not, like, perfectly, but, like, to a pretty large degree, as long as their name isn't, you know, Dusan Vlahovic.
Who's has 4 shots for 90 in Serie A? Just...
yeah, but he's got a bunch of goals, so, like, it's a success again.
Yep.
Yeah, I Branthwaite seems to me to be the guy, right? Like, if you can get a big chunk of money for Branthwaite and, like, reinvest half of it, a third of it, something in that range into the club, it also seems to me that, like, while Everton are priced out of midfield and forward gambles to a large degree, I mean, you got, like, the gamble you have to take is Cherokee, who's very cheap, but, like, has numbers to hope on in Portugal, and he's not going to play for a year and a half while you get him used to the Premier League type of a gamble. Center back gambles are often cheaper because, again, much, much harder to evaluate center backs. So that's what it seems to me. I think if you can get a good chunk of money for Branthwaite this offseason, I think it's got to happen.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other situation is that because you have Dyche, your needs at center back are more straightforward,
yeah,
and the skills you need to target are cheaper. Like, Branthwaite's pretty fast. Dyche doesn't need a center back to be that fast.
Right.
Like, that's a luxury item in a Dyche center back. And you can probably shop at the cheaper end of the market and get most of the value you're getting out of Branthwaite in a Dyche system.
I mean, my secret suspicion is you could play Ben Godfrey as a center back instead of the weird roaming, like, positionally questionable destroyer that he is in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And that, like, if Dyche turned him into a center back, that might work. But I basically agree with all of this. Whereas, like, Onana has the potential to explode into a much more valuable prospect, even while making contributions on the field right now that are more difficult to replace.
Yeah. And then the other problem, similarly, is that Branthwaite's center back partner Tarkowski is 31, which is not young, but, like, for a center back playing a relatively restricted role, I feel better about his near-term aging than a 35-year-old Idrissa Gana Gueye or a 32-year-old Doucouré.
So Gana is getting phased out of a lot of midfield minutes, basically in favor of Garner, which is, like, yeah, complicated, because when British broadcasters say their name, they just say them the same. And if I'm not paying super attention and don't know who started, I don't know who's playing. But he is already being phased out. I mean, I think, like, you look at the midfield options and they're not, nobody's going to be confused here. They're not great, right? But Garner has contributed strongly since he was brought into the team, as has Harrison, who, like, usually plays on the wing, but sometimes plays in the Doucouré role in weird ways. The Doucouré thing is interesting, sort of from a lineup perspective, Because there's nobody on this Everton team who can replace what he does when he's on the field, which is like give you like plus defensive contributions for a 10 and also get into like good scoring opportunities. Like he's really like a bargain basement version of what we're seeing a lot of these players play as these days. And he's not, and like many of those players have a lot of passing in their locker. And Doucouré does not, right? Doucouré is like, the passing thing is absent. Whereas like somebody like a James Maddison or whoever who does like influential thing in the final third, midfielder, like light midfielder, but midfielder defensive production. Like, Doucouré does those things, but Maddison also passes really well, and Doucouré does not. Like, just doesn't contribute. Which, like, again, Dyche doesn't want and or need. But there's nobody else on Everton who contributes that in that way right now. And, like, that's not an easily gettable position. Like, that set of skills is expensive to find and not cheap. And, like, what you have to do if you're Everton is look for ways to find, like, the talents that are cheap on the market, not the talents that are expensive on the market, and then make that work on the field.
Yeah, and I think that Garner is a good example of that, because there's a number of ways he's not a traditional midfielder. He's not really much of a like guy who receives passes,
yeah,
which is usually a thing that midfielders do, but he mixes it up in midfield and he stops the ball.
Yeah, and like, to be clear, part of what you've gotten from Dyche is a system in which the midfielders don't have to pass the ball. Like, that is the thing, that is how they do it. It either goes up the wings or it goes over the top. There is no midfielders passing the ball here.
Yep. And so this kind of gets at like one larger system thing that I think, which is that Everton right now, as far as I can tell, there isn't like a like football ops process. And if we were in charge of that team, one of our obvious priorities would be building a football ops process. But building a football ops process from nothing takes time.
Also, it takes money. Like I understand that the salaries you pay to like front office people are not the wages you pay to like players. They're somewhat significantly less. But, like, you still need to pay them to do things. And, like, you don't have money to do that other than by selling players. Like, it is a real problem here.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think it's worth it. Like, it's a good investment. And you need to, you know, there is inevitable risk in running a football club at the lower level.
Yeah.
And, you know, choosing not to make pretty cheap investments is sort of one of that's what the Sunderland vortex is in a lot of ways.
Right.
And it is a risk. Like, you could find yourself saying, you know, man, we paid a £70,000 salary to like a guy who's going to do a bunch of data work for us, and those £70,000, maybe that could have been the raise for the player that we sold that kept us up, and that would have been worth way more. And like, that is true at a certain margin, but like, you're never going to succeed on that math on average. But at the same time, like, you're not going to build up that system in a summer. Like, if we took over the team right now, neither of us is a football executive, so that would be a problem. But like, even if a really, really talented football executive who had these ideas wanted to do it, they couldn't do it in the summer. So what you're really doing this summer is that Sean Dyche is doing your targeting. Sean Dyche is the guy, at least this summer. And you have to like figure out the relationships and the process in the organization that he's willing to work in, and how much, you know, authority you can like talk to him. It's like, we want to put this authority in with you, over you, however this works, but not right now.
Yeah.
Right now, like, this is Sean Dyche's club for a summer, more or less.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think if you come in with new ownership and money, like, what you have to first say is, like, our goal here is, like, Project 2030 or whatever. You know, like, New Dawn 2030. Everything you say sounds fascist-y. But, like, the thing you have to do is be like, in 2030, this is where we are building towards being a team that is going to be good and competitive and safe.
Yep.
And like, That's the time horizon. It's getting into the new stadium. It's getting that financial stuff off your back. It's having a big boy grown up front office, like business operation in place. And then it's like climbing up to be a more competitive and good team. And like, there's no shortcut to that. And I think everything you do is has to be dictated by that. And so what that means in a number of ways is like, you're not buying young players looking to be like a player flipping operation in the way that Brighton or Brentford are, right? Because they do it from a baseline of, well, we're pretty solid all around. We're not getting relegated. And if we did, it wouldn't vaporize the club anyway, right?
Yep.
You need to be hoarding your meager resources so that like you are getting prime age players that are above relegation level in for a while, right? You're not taking big swings on flipping prospects. You can't. Dwight McNeil was a very good signing in that way. For example, flipping Anthony Gordon into Dwight McNeil and, you know, then getting meaningful minutes from Garner is like the kind of thing you want to keep doing. And if you can do that with Branthwaite, that's great. The next year you maybe do it with Onana, that's great. Iwobi was another guy. They had a very, very good offseason, last offseason. And the goal, but it is not an offseason that sets you up for future competitive success. It sets you up for right now competitive success while not losing more money. And that's what they need to do next summer, the summer after, and probably the summer after that.
I think that's right. So let's talk about Onana a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think that both of us see him as a, you know, a potential star.
Yes.
He's already a good Premier League midfielder at 22. One of the things that's been very interesting to me is that I would not have pegged him as a player that would be profiled as like an Arsenal target. And, you know, I don't know how, all of these things, like when there's like, you know, team is looking at so-and-so, like it's a classic bullshit dump, but there's enough out there about Onana to make me think that it's at least worth talking about what it would be, what it would mean if he really is that target. Because the thing is that what Onana is right now, that is a good Premier League footballer, is a roving destroyer who is very tall and fairly good at everything else. Like, he covers an incredible amount of ground, and he wins the ball off people constantly, and he's huge. And that makes a solid player if he's not bad at anything else. He's not bad at receiving the ball, passing the ball, carrying the ball, getting to the penalty area. You know, he's not bad positionally, defensively. But that's not what you're buying. And if he has upside in one of those other areas, in particular, if he has possession upside, suddenly you're talking about a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, I think he clearly has ball carrying upside. He isn't allowed to carry the ball on this team. And to be quite honest, when he was playing under Frank Lampard and he was allowed to carry the ball, while he clearly had skills, he absolutely had no idea how to pick his spots. But he clearly has ball carrying upside. And, like, I don't think it is surprising that Arsenal might be interested in, because one, like, likely upside for him that I see is Thomas Partey. A roving destroyer who is a very good ball carrier who learns, you know, he needs to learn to be more careful with possession as a ball carrier. But, like, it doesn't surprise me that Arsenal could look at him and see the shape of the role that he occupies as what Thomas Partey did until basically this year when Thomas Partey has become a non-entity for a variety of reasons. So, like, I get that. I have a second question, though, which is, like, it's not clear to me what Onana as a superstar under Deitch looks like. Because, as we've talked about, this team doesn't pass in midfield. Like, it doesn't. And, like, he could change the system to feature passing in midfield, but who is going to pass, even if you think Onana is that good? Like, who else is there? So, you know, he's been used kind of as a target man sometimes. Like, that was the first thing Dyche did with him. Now he's just much more of a, he's like much less of an attacking presence as he has been deployed quite effectively as this destroyer in midfield. But like, there's a cap on how good a destroyer in midfield can be on a Sean Dyche team.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question of how much can Onana improve in ways that are visible to his potential market? Because, like, the situation we're talking about is one where Onana gets sold in another year or two.
I mean,
the world where Onana stays on Everton right. is mostly, like, not a happy world. It's not a world where Onana turns into a superstar and Everton keep him and he carries Everton to the Europa League.
Right.
Like, if he stays, it's probably because something went wrong. He's injured too much. The development doesn't kind of come.
I mean, I think the obvious way that he, like, gets sold for a ton of money is that, like, next season he has six-headed goals from set pieces. Like, that's the thing. Like, you wait for the year in which he has a very good set-piece goal-scoring year, and you're like, oh, okay. Like that, now all of a sudden his price rockets. Because everybody yep. looks at him and says, you know, not because he's outperforming his XG necessarily, but because he has a very high XG year from set pieces, which is, like, very in play for him.
Yeah, and the other thing is that because it's not clear where the caps on his ability are, it's not clear where, like, the tools are going to prevent him from taking a step forward. There's a couple of step forwards that are possible. Like, you can absolutely be a standout defensive midfielder in a Dyche system. You can be a guy who anchors, like, wow, this is just a good defense. And he's not that right now. He runs all over the place, and, like, he's not wildly productive. It's just very, very good. So that's one possibility. The other thing is that Sean Dyche has at different times incorporated midfield progression into his system. Ashley Westwood
was a quietly a great passer for those Burnley teams.
I do wonder, though, if someone whose primary progression ability is carrying is something that Dyche would ever allow.
Yeah, I also wonder, and there's a little bit of bad fortune this year where Doucouré and Onana were hurt at the same time. I do wonder if, like, there is a world in which you just get tons of defensive production from him as that quasi-10 player. The problem is that Everton don't have two other midfielders to put behind him if you put him there.
Yep.
You can imagine kind of a weird midfield with Onana, Garner, and Harrison as your three midfielders, but Harrison is going to be the more 10-8 there. But like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Onana gets a role crafted for him where he is more of a box presence in the way he was right at the beginning when Dyche got there.
Yeah, and like, figuring out a way for Garner to be a deep-lying midfielder who just defends.
Right.
Like, that's the sort of problem that Sean Dyche is very good at wrapping his head around. Because that's a weird, weird role. But it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Now, I do need to, like, bring up, we have one other issue here where, like, we need to talk about, like, what is Everton going to do? Because the right-back situation is a mess. Like, basically, it's Seamus Coleman and Ashley Young. And, like, Ben Godfrey is filled in there, and they've got a kid who fills in there, like, not quite capably. But, like, part of, like, scraping the bottom of the barrel for the, you know, looking for the coins, the catch cushions is like, Ashley Young has played a lot of meaningful minutes for this team. And like, they are going to need to solve the right side of their team to a, you know, certain definition of solved in some, like, that's where a lot of the Brathwaite money has to go, I think.
I trust Sean Dyche. Like, you come in, you don't tell Sean Dyche what to do. But Ashley Young's been awful this season. I don't get it at all. Like, there's not a lot of guys who believe it. He's been playing wing. He doesn't produce up there. He's been playing defense. Like, you know, I think because he can fit in and, like, not mostly be out of position, they do that. But I think that, like, this is more of an opportunity than a problem to me. If you can get someone that Sean Dyche is okay with filling those minutes, I think they're just going to be better.
Yeah.
Than Ashley Young.
That might be. Actually, a lot of Ashley Young's minutes have not come at right back. They've come at, like, right thing with a defender behind him, or left thing with, like, that winger is the wrong term. Midfielder is the wrong term. Like, mostly a live body.
Yeah. And then I think the other question is striker. Because they've got two of them.
They do.
Who have combined for 8 goals and 16.4 XG.
I think at the end of the day, part of the thing with being in the position you're in is, like, if you've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin and you've got Beto, who you spent money on last summer, you got to roll with them. Like, there's too much there to try to... You have too much of your meager resources invested there to try to upgrade it. So it's like, figure it out. Maybe the two of them play together? I don't know.
And there's more than enough production there in some fashion that it's not at all unreasonable to tell Dyche, figure it out. We got you two guys. They can do some stuff. They've got some limitations.
And there's Shirky, who exists, who you spent money on as a prospect. Like, you don't get, like, you have to, like, really try to get as much out of these guys as you can. Like, you took your shot there. That's your shot. Like, you don't get another one.
Yeah. And, you know, at this point, Calvert-Lewin is increasingly clearly one of the worst finishers in the game. He's got, like, 48 non-penalty goals from 62 goals. And it's not just this season.
Yeah.
Even his best seasons, his very best seasons, he was at XG.
Yeah.
And it is a lot less clear in Beto's numbers that this is the case. He's basically G equals XG. The question is, like, you know, there's still, like, even Calvert-Lewin, even all the minutes he's got, all the shots he's taken, you still can't stabilize that at, you know, like 25% below XG, like, you know, one of the worst finishers that is, you know, Dzeko level and under. But there's a fair case that you're going to be getting less out of him than you'd like, and Beto may be the guy who can give you a little bit more. But, like, both of them have produced in that role. You just have to, like, Dyche has to work it out. There's no changing it. It's been one of the problems this year, but it's also not a place that you would come in and make roster shifts, because there's just too much production and too much money locked up in those guys. And obviously no one is going to pay you for them this summer, because this is the year they both had two of their worst finishing seasons ever.
So that's Everton.
Yep.
To bring it full circle, the way I differ, and I think we're in lockstep agreement here, from, like, traditional fandom when it comes to Everton, is that, like, if a new owner comes in, the typical thing a new owner says is, we're going to make this team better and more competitive. And the bottom line for Everton right now is that you need a new owner to come in and sort it out before you even get to being competitive. Now, you can't, like, say that. So in a lot of ways, you know, if I was advising the new owner, if we were advising the new owner, a lot of what you're doing for the first 2 to 3 years is, like, publicity. Like, how do we relate and, like, get the trust and investment in this ownership group from the fans, while understanding that the goal is not doing, like, that we are not in a position where we can do it the traditional way by winning more games. Like, the way you save Everton is not by winning more games in the next few years. It is by being good enough to survive while getting your financial and management house in order.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's sort of a weird situation talking about this team, because the more closely you look at the squad and the manager and the performances, the easier it is to feel like everything's fine before you remember the size of the stakes and the problem that they're facing, that's sort of looming above the, like, sort of Damocles over this team. Damocles is fine, but there's a sword.
That is right. Damocles is fine, but there's a sword.
So thank you so much for listening. Obviously, patreon.com/doublepivot is where all of this fun Trivote stuff happens, and there'll be Champions League podcast this week. And we'll be back and talk later.
Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.